This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, sponsored by SoundRing. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast. My name is Shane Told. I am your host. Today we have an amazing show. I sit down with my friend Dan Campbell from the Wonder Years, affectionately known as Soupy. And we recorded this interview in Toronto at their show. They're on tour right now with Motion City Soundtrack. And what was kind of interesting about this is I was trying to get Dan on the show for a while. And I finally hit it off. I was like, you guys are going to be in Toronto. Let's do this. And we set up the interview when we were going to chat. And he's like, hey, man, do you want to play? And I'm like, well, what do you mean play? And he's like, well, I know you got some solo stuff going on. So, you know, would you like to jump on the show? So I was like, of course, I'd love to do it. So it was kind of cool. It was like we were, you know, playing the same show, hanging out, you know, on the bus, having a conversation like two lead singers on tour would have. And one of the reasons I wanted to have Dan on the show is I find his lead singer personality, you know, very unique for this scene. You know, he doesn't get up there with long hair and tattoos and a leather jacket and he's like, fuck yeah, motherfuckers, let's do this. You know, so that's different. But in a way, you know, he's just up there, he's being himself. And another thing about him is he has strong opinions and he doesn't mind making them known. But at the same time, I find sometimes he can be a bit guarded. So this interview was all about just talking to him about, you know, his opinions on things and trying to get him to open up. And I think we did a great job. Before we jump in, I want to remind you guys that my band Silverstein is on tour right now with Senses Fail, 100th, and Capsize. It's a great tour across America, having so much fun. We're just a few days in. And if you guys are looking to come out, which you definitely should, you guys have to check out soundrink.com. That's soundrink.com. And what makes them special is they have the regular ticket links. You know, you can buy tickets for, you know, all your favorite shows. But they also do a lot of really cool VIP packages with a whole bunch of bands. So if you want to come out and you want to have a meet and greet with Senses Fail and Silverstein, we also have some really, really cool exclusive merch items. Go to soundrink.com, check it out. There's some great stuff up there. And we'll see you at the shows. I also got to give a big thank you to everybody that listened to episode 1 of Lead Singer Syndrome with Caleb Shomo from Beartooth. It was a great interview and the feedback was so overwhelmingly positive. Thank you so much. Thanks for adding me on Twitter, Instagram, liking me on Facebook. All that stuff is super, super cool. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you go on to iTunes or whatever you use for podcasts and make sure you hit subscribe because that is super, super important too. Also, if you guys really like the show, if you could go on iTunes and write a review, preferably 5 stars, that would be tremendous as well. In fact, the praise was so overwhelming that I was actually a little bit bummed out. I only got 1 message on the Lead Singer Syndrome hate line. So I want more hate. Give me your hate. Maybe after this one, we'll have a little more hatred. So please give me a call at 1-657-666-HATE. That is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast hate line. And please really let me have it. I want to hear some hatred. Also, suggestions for the show, guests you'd like to see, email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. It's that easy. Send me an email and let me know what you'd love to see. Any feedback, I really, really, really appreciate it. All right, it's time for episode 2 of Lead Singer Syndrome and my conversation with Dan Soupy Campbell of the Wonder Years. So if you call me back, let me So we're here. We did it. Finally.
We made it.
We've been talking about chatting up on a podcast for a couple months now.
Yes. Actually, yeah, like 4 or 5 months probably.
And we're here in Toronto, of all places, which is cool. This is my hometown.
One of my favorite cities.
Is it really?
I love Toronto.
Why?
It's got just this cool, I mean, I don't know, the areas where we play, it's got this cool multicultural vibe.
It feels like
certain parts of London to me.
Okay.
Where it's like ethnically diverse and there's just cool restaurants everywhere that are all locally owned. It's not a ton of like kind of
chain places.
Yeah, it's not a whole lot of conglomerate. I don't know.
That's
true.
The city of Toronto, that's true.
I know that it's like incredibly expensive to live here and there's all this downside to it, I'm sure. But when I get to just come here for a day, I just get this vibe of like, it feels vibrant. I don't know. It feels diverse.
Yeah. I mean, I've grown up here and it's funny, you know, whenever you grow up in a place, I'm sure like there's parts, things about Philadelphia. Like I love Philadelphia. It's one of my favorite cities. And I'm sure there's parts of Philadelphia that you're like, oh God, like, you know, but then you forget like what makes it great.
Yeah. No. And what's great now is that I lived in Philly for a couple of years. When we were making The Upsides, I was living in Philly. And then when we started touring full time, originally it was like, well, I can't afford rent. I just can't.
Yeah.
So I moved all my stuff into storage and I slept on a mattress in my dad's basement for a while. And then my friend Richie was like, well, you can live at my house. And that was in the suburbs. So I lived in the suburbs for like 4 years.
Yeah.
And I burped. I don't know if that picked that up.
You know what? We're going to have to edit that, man.
Damn,
this is lead singer syndrome. And like, if they know
that
you're
burping
and shit, this is like, could be the end of your career.
It's over for me. And then I just recently.
I smell a fart too. Is that you?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just keeping it real.
Just doing what I got to do, man. I don't know. You're on a tour bus, so it just smells farty in general.
I actually commented how great it smelled in here when I walked in.
I mean, it's
we're on like day four.
Also the first 2 days we didn't take the bus because you can't take it to New York, really.
Yeah.
And we're close enough that we just drove cars. Like I drove my own car to the show. What was I saying? Oh, so I moved back to Philly last year. And it's the coolest city right now. Like Philadelphia is the place. If you're gonna go somewhere in America, come to Philadelphia. We're on fire. The New York Times called it the number three place in the world you had to be this year. Like every list of like cool U.S. cities has it at the top. It's the number two fastest growing city in America at the moment. And
well, it's always been one of my favorites.
It's just getting cooler.
Yeah, I mean, I remember. You know, it's funny because you say, "Oh, Toronto's so great." When I go to certain American cities, I always feel like they're quite a bit ahead of us. You know, like I was vegan for a long time, and go to Philly, it's like the vegan mecca.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, Philly's
like,
great
like
for that.
Things like that,
Blackbird
and in terms of like bars and like finding the cool beer. Like Philadelphia has, you know, all the like West Coast stuff you can't get anywhere else in the country except at the breweries in the West Coast.
Yeah,
and they have it. Like,
and we have great coffee. We have Reanimator.
Right,
we have Steep and Grind.
Yeah.
We have United by Blue. Old City Coffee, Menagerie. There's a ton of
great coffee. We have a great place here called Tim Hortons.
Oh, I've heard of it.
Yeah, they got this dark roast now that's...
Josh was drinking it earlier and went, this is actually the worst coffee I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's funny because I kind of like it just because I'm so used to it after drinking it pretty much my whole life.
I think you guys make Tim Hortons makes a great hot chocolate.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever had the hot chocolate there.
There's another
place called Second Cup. They got great hot chocolate. However, I have to say, people that are from Toronto listening to this are going to give me shit because there are great coffee shops here.
I'm sure that there are.
And there are great vegetarian restaurants. There are amazing
places. But what you're saying is that they weren't here until more recently.
Yeah,
and
it's been...
Early in your life, it was harder to find
all
of that. I had a great hot chocolate at a Tim Hortons in Kingston once. We were driving through...
Oh God, Kingston.
We were stuck in a snowstorm. We pulled over in Kingston, and I got a great hot chocolate to warm me up.
All there is in Kingston. They say hookers and hockey players.
All there is in Kingston. Is Kingston in Essex County?
I don't know what county it's in.
Okay. There's one of my favorite graphic novels of all time is called Essex County, and it's about like a farming county... And I think that part of Canada.
It's possible it is. I'm not sure. We're not as county obsessed as like in the U.S. People are like, oh no, that's L.A. County. That's Orange County.
Like,
I don't fucking know.
Dude, that line is
right
there.
I have no idea what county.
That line is right there at Seal Beach. And if you fuck with it,
that's
a problem.
Right. Yeah. And we're just into, this is my city. And so we don't care about that shit. But anyway, let's jump into it, dude. I got to ask you, it's football season.
It is.
And you are a football fan.
I love football.
You maybe like... And I read somewhere you have 8 fantasy football teams. Is this true?
I am currently running 8 fantasy football leagues. Well, I'm running 7 and I'm in an 8th.
Oh, my God.
And there is an explanation for that. I told fans this year that if they were willing to donate $40 to this charity called Rain, that I would invite them to play fantasy football with me. And so they sent me, we went back and forth on emails. They sent me their payment confirmations. It all went into the charity. We raised like $2,600, I think, for Rain in like 24 hours. And I invited them all to play fantasy football with me. And I've been keeping up with it. Like I'm pretty dominant. I think that this week I went 7-1 across the 8 leagues. I've never done worse than 5-3. Wow. It's been going really well. And, you know, there's like a shit talk board on there. So me and the guys on there, the girls on there, I'll talk some shit to each other.
So you must be spending a lot of your time.
Well, what's great is that when you're on tour, there's a good amount. I just, you know, I'll lay in my bunk and set my lineup, and there's a little exclamation point that says, like, someone said something. So if someone said something funny, I'll pop in and talk shit back.
Yeah, sure. No, that's
great. We had a good time drafting, and everyone, you know, with their sign-up fee, I sent them a signed copy of our record.
Yep.
And what's going to happen is the winners of each of the six leagues that are for charity. So there's also one league with, or two leagues with just some friends. So there's six for charity and two with friends. The winners of the six charity leagues are going to get a prize pack, and I'm going to invite them all to one of the 1 week leagues. And the winner of that, like the champions bracket 1 week fantasy league, will get a test press of the record.
Oh, that's so good. That's really cool.
It's a cool way to interact with fans and to find some common ground and also do something great for charity and have a good time.
Well, I'm in one league, and my first pick was Marshawn Lynch, and my second pick was Dez Bryant. So in a way here.
Yeah.
I've won my last 2 weeks. So I guess I'm 2-4.
There's the thing that there's always this value-based drafting strategy where it's like, okay, take the running backs early because they have so much value. And this year I said, fuck that. I'm flipping the entire thing upside down because every year one at least of those top five, top six running backs, at least one, if not two, sometimes three, will get hurt and ruin your season.
Yeah.
So this year I said, I'm going to go with safer bets. And I took wide receivers at the top and quarterbacks for the first five rounds. I only took wide receivers, quarterbacks, and tight ends. I took Gronk a lot in the first round.
Intense.
And then for the next like four rounds, I just piled up mid-tier running backs with the idea that some of them would break out. And some of them did. Deion Lewis, Devontae Freeman have had awesome seasons. And, you know, Arian Foster, you pick up late. Now he's healthy. He's running well again. Those kinds of things. I did a lot of that. I took, instead of taking DeMarco Murray in the second round, I took Ryan Matthews in the 10th. And they've been doing about the same damage.
Well, Ryan Matthews was a bust for me when he was at the Chargers a few years back.
But he's been great. And I honestly, you know, no disrespect to DeMarco. I love, you know, everybody on our team. Ryan Matthews is running harder right now, and I wish that he was, like, it's hard to say starting because the Eagles are kind of rotating three running backs in all the time, but I would like to see Matthews get more touches than Murray at the moment.
I got to ask you, man, how did you become such a big football fan? Because, you know, you're not exactly what I would call, like, if I looked at you walking down the street, no offense, I wouldn't say, that guy's definitely, like, a huge football fan. And, like, you know, not to say, like, punk rock is, like, necessarily doesn't go with football. But, like, there is sort of, like, it can be the antithesis of it.
Yeah,
you know?
I loved football before I loved punk rock. Football was my first thing. I wanted to play football so, so bad. And,
Dad, where's my height?
No, and I played, and I was undersized, and I played for a few years, and they eventually put me at safety because I was quick and I was determined and I hit hard. But it got to a point where they were like, I sprained my neck, and they're like, you're just too small. You just got to stop. You're not putting on any weight. You had to play in like weight classes, and I was having to play in like the 85-pound class because of my age, but I still only weighed 55 pounds. And so it got to a point where I was just getting my fucking face smashed in. And so I had to give up that dream, and then around middle school, I found punk rock and was like, well, I want to do this.
How did you find punk rock?
I kind of always...
There's always a story. It's either a record or you found yourself like wandering into a show.
Yeah. Well, found is a weird thing because my dad is a young guy, and in the car we listen to Weezer and Beck and Nirvana and the Replacements and the Ramones and the Sex Pistols. And that was kind of like, I don't think that I really had ever like heard a full Beatles record until I was like 19. You know, like, or maybe 18.
Yeah.
A lot of people were like, oh, yeah, my parents loved the Beatles and Zeppelin, and my parents hated that shit.
Crazy.
My dad listened to, I mean, he also was big into, like, NWA and A Tribe Called Quest. And,
That's unique
and so,
for people our age, you know?
Yeah.
That's-
and Green Day, you know, Dookie was one of my first favorite records, but I wasn't concentrated on music at that point. And in the eighth grade, my friend Robin was starting a band, and he was like, I want a bass player. Do you want to learn how to play bass? And I agreed to learn how to play bass and started really falling in love with the genre. And then eventually decided I want to be a singer, which was an uphill battle because I was a god-awful singer. No pitch, super, just really, really bad singer.
But, so what made you want to become a singer? Was there a musician you were trying to emulate?
Or? I think that I felt like I wasn't a musician. You know, like I wasn't a great bass player. I don't have great rhythm, but I love the medium of songwriting. Like as an art form, the story that you can tell with a song. And I felt like I was more of a performer and a songwriter and a storyteller than I ever was a musician. And so I just kind of needed an outlet for that medium. And so that kind of, I was just like, I would like to be the guy that gets to tell the story. I want to write the lyrics. That was really the crux of it, is I want to write the lyrics.
Yeah, because you're, I mean, knowing you as a dude for a few years now, that's kind of where, like, I don't look at you, you know, this is the podcast is called Lead Singer Syndrome, right? So I haven't got a chance yet to interview that real, like, decadent lead singer rock star that, like, you know, is, like, hooking up with chicks left, right, and center and, like, you know, fucking blow in the dressing room, like, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that because that's going to be a lot of fun.
But today is not that day.
But today is not that day. And you are more of kind of, like, you know, you used to be a teacher. That's, like, kind of what I get out of your vibe. You're, like, up there almost like it's this punk rock, like, class. Like, you want to teach people something. Is that true or not true?
I think that I want to say something. And whether they, I think teaching can be, what's the word I want to use for this? I don't want it to seem like I know more than the people in our audience because I don't think that I do.
I guess I don't mean teach. I just mean it's important
for people
to take something away
from it. I want to express a thought and I want people to think about that. Whether they take something away from it or not, whether they agree with me or not is less important than the fact that they heard it and they internalized it and they thought about it. That's what's important to me. So, you know, a lot of time, especially on this new record, we're expressing a lot of opinions or we're bringing up a lot of topics that we think need talking about. And we're not telling you this is the right way to think about it. Think about it the way we think about it. It's not like, you know, we're not preaching. It's not brainwashy. This is no propaganda. It's more, here's a thing that maybe you weren't thinking about and maybe you could start thinking about it.
Well, lyrically, I feel like the new record is quite a bit different from your old stuff. I don't know if it's a conscious thing, but I feel like your new record has, it's less about things you're going through personally, maybe. Like, maybe it's more about external things.
Yeah,
that's
well,
right.
So, exactly.
Like other stories and...
But we think that it's both. So what we really wanted to do was find that middle ground, because what Wonder Years songs are at their very core, the base of them, the root of them, they're personal. That's what makes us who we are, and that's what makes us the Wonder Years and not Silverstein and not State Champs and not You Blew It. All of those bands are incredible, but that's not us. So the crux of it was, how do we maintain our individuality? How do we maintain our personality? What makes us us? And simultaneously write these songs that are dealing with these other topics. And so what we found were the topics that I was most concerned about, the topics I wanted to write about the most, there was a reason I wanted to write about each of them. And the reason was that they had each personally affected me in my life. And so what I realized I could do was write a song on both a micro and a macro level. So on a micro level, these are events that have impacted me. But then what we like to think we did on this record was, instead of staying on that micro level, some point in the song, we zoom out a little bit and you get kind of the macro. And you understand the greater social construct that is influencing or caused those events to happen.
But that's got to have...
That dialogue can open up.
Yeah, but the reason that that happened has got to be because you're older, you're more comfortable in your skin, and you're smarter to the point where... Because when you're, you know, the band's been around for almost 10 years now, right? So when you're like 20, let's say 21, it's a lot harder to zoom out and see the big picture when you're just kind of in your own head and be like
sure,
I'm upset, or this is my emotional response, to where now it's more of an intellectual response. Would that be accurate?
There's definitely a thought with that. I mean, I'm not saying that that's more for me. I think that you are right in your diagnosis of me, that at 20, 22, 24, I was more selfish. I wasn't thinking about those issues. There are a lot of our fans that are 17 and already have a better understanding of an issue than I do at 29. And so I'm not saying that everybody in that age bracket is that way. I'm saying I definitely agree with you. And there's a song on the record called I Don't Like Who I Was Then that is speaking directly to the idea that I was thinking selfishly and I wasn't thinking about the bigger picture at that age range. I do think that also this record is angrier. A lot of people were talking about it being a sad record. we think of it as an angry record. There's these, all of these things happening in the world that we were just fired up about, and we just wanted to kind of go out and sing about.
Absolutely, man. I get that vibe. I want to talk about the show tonight, because I'm playing.
Yes, you are.
And you graciously invited me to join you playing solo. And it's kind of cool because I'm working on a solo project now. And I'm sure it won't be launched yet when people hear this, but it's going to be launched very soon. And you're actually kind of one of the people I asked about this when I got it going. You remember that conversation we had?
Yeah,
and because of the Aaron West stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was very interested in how you went from being like this, you know, front man of a band, where there's like a lot of people, different people kind of controlling things that are happening, to all of a sudden, hey, I want to do a solo thing where it's just me, I make all the decisions and all that. So I kind of wanted your take on it, and I'm interested in where you're at now with that and that project.
There's as far as like where that project is, I'm currently writing a few more songs. I want to do a 7-inch. We're trying to figure out how that happens right now logistically, but I'm going to do it with Ace Enders again, who produced the record and who...
early November, yeah.
Yeah, who is basically the other member of the band.
Oh, cool.
To me. Ace refuses to think of it that way. He's like, I'm a producer and I'm doing what what a producer does, but he's such a humble guy and such a wonderful songwriter and an incredible musician and just a warm person to know.
He is.
That's just kind of his prerogative. But the project wouldn't be the same without Ace. That said... What I think you're talking about, and I agree with you, is there's a little bit of an anxiety thing where you're like, well, it's six of us in the Wonder Years to make every decision, and now it's just me. And that can be really freeing. It's just like, if I want to do this thing, I'm going to fucking do it. And like, nobody can stop me. If I want to play a show, I can just go do that in my Honda Civic. And I don't have to ask anyone if they're free. You know, if I want to do a full band show, obviously, sure. I have to, but... I have the option of just going with a guitar and playing. If I want a merch design done, I don't have to have anybody okay it. If I, you know, want to put out, or if I want to write some songs and put out a record, I just sit in my apartment and write some songs.
Does it ever scare you though? That like it's all, since it's all your opinion, like maybe you need somebody to bounce an idea off.
That's what
like,
I was going to say.
Man, I think this shirt design's cool. And then I print it and it's like, everyone's like, that's the ugliest thing I've ever
seen.
So that's
the difficulty then, is that you don't have, you lose like the backup, you know what I mean? So like, if we're writing a Wonder Years song and we're stuck, well, there are six heads trying to figure out what the next part of that song is.
Yeah, exactly.
If I'm writing an Aaron West song and I'm stuck, it's like, well, I guess I'm done for the day. I guess I'll play Madden. Fuck me.
But I mean, I guess like venturing into this, it's scary because I'm in that process right now, and it's scary figuring this stuff out. And as much as I do a lot of the writing and stuff and stuff for Silverstein, when it's just me, I'm scared. And I wonder now, you've gone through this, you've done a record, quite successful, you know, acclaimed record. I think it's great.
Thank you.
And do you think that coming out of that, you're a lot more confident person after going through that, and now
I'm a more
bringing
confident,
that back into,
I'm
you know?
A more confident musician, for sure. I really was a terrible guitar player before I started the Aaron West project, and I'm still not great, but like I play guitar on one of the songs that we do now with Wonder Years, when Matt gives me his guitar and goes and sits behind a second drum kit, and I feel confident enough to play that, whereas I would not have before this.
Yep.
I was more confident in helping with the songwriting, you know. Like,
I mean, Wonder Years, if there's anything they need, it's another guitar player.
Oh yeah, we don't have enough of those. Well, it still remains at three when we do that song, but we add another drummer is the issue. You know, and I felt more confident in helping with the songwriting, but as far as like, in general, it's such a different thing what I do with Aaron West, because it's a character piece, and it's almost acting on stage. Or I like to think of it as kayfabe. I think of it everything in professional wrestling terms. So I'm kayfabing the crowd. So when I do the sets, it's not, hey, I'm Dan from the Wonder Years, and here are some songs about another guy's life. I sit down and I say, how's everybody doing? My name is Aaron West, and these gentlemen behind me are the Roaring Twenties, and we play songs in character, I know the story that the record took, you know, how the record worked, because before I sat down to write the songs, I did a lot of storyboarding and journaling to break out, like, this is the entire story from front to back. This is what the record's going to be about. And then sectioning that off into songs.
Yeah.
And so there are all these details that didn't get included that I then use as the banter. So
I get it.
Between songs, I use all those other details from the story that didn't make the actual songs. And so it's kind of a totally different experience to sit there, one, to have a guitar in my hands, and two, to be in character while performing.
But it's a, I mean, it's a real passion project, I guess, for you, right? And that's,
yeah,
that's where it came from. Like, you had this idea. I read a little bit, like, some other interviews, and you said, like, oh, you know, I wanted to get better at guitar, and I started this, and originally it was just kind of going to be for fun, and then Ace sort of said, well, this is great, you should really run with this, and then you did run with it.
Yeah.
And now it's, like, almost like a second career for you. It's, like, another source of income. Like, is that something that's been important to you, too? Like, you got to split one... Let's yeah. Be not, like, you got to split
it six ways.
Like, was that part of the thinking there when you decided, fuck, I'm just going to go for this?
Well, I never thought that it would really do as well as it did, which is awesome, mm-hmm. and a testament to how wonderful Wonder Years fans are, and how, also how open people were to hearing some other stuff from me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely, like, it's different now than I think it, like, when I was, like, listening to your band when I was in, you know, high school or early college, and people were buying records. Things were, like, a little different.
They were.
Financially. And I'm not saying that we don't do totally fine. You know, like, I never miss a rent payment. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, yeah. We're not starving artists. We're playing really great, really big shows, and we have really supportive fans, and everything is great. But it isn't the same as when bands existed in 2002, 2004, that era. We, you know, none of us own houses. None of us can afford that kind of thing yet. And we've been saving and scrounging and trying to get there.
It's hard in Philadelphia, too. It's hard in Toronto,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's hard everywhere. And it is. It's nice to have just, you know, when people buy an Aaron West shirt, to know you gave me $20, and after the cost of good on that, the rest of this is going towards my bills. It's going mm-hmm. towards someday owning a home for my family. I just got engaged, and, you know.
Oh, congratulations.
That's the kind of thing that, you know, this can help me pay for this wedding. Because as well as we do with the Wonder Years, we're very certainly not wealthy people. We make a normal middle class salary.
Yeah.
We make about what I would be making if I was teaching, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's important for people to understand. I feel like most of the people that find out what we do, they either think we're fucking millionaires or they think we're, like, fucking borderline homeless. No one seems to understand that, like,
exactly.
I live in Toronto. My rent is expensive, but, you know, I make my payments every month. I get a little bit extra. I can take a vacation once in a while, but I have a car,
yeah.
But I don't have, you know, I'm not, like, living lavishly with, I don't have a Lamborghini.
I drive a 2004 Honda Civic that I bought from my mom.
Yeah, right.
The keyless entry no longer works, like the unlock fob thing.
Gotta take the key out in the cold.
Yeah,
and
it's like, now she works for Anthropology, but before my fiance worked at J. Crew, and she was the assistant to the head of men's design at their corporate office. And people were like, she was like, oh, my boyfriend's on tour. And they're like, oh, I starving artist.
Yeah, so what does he do for work?
So, like, oh,
no,
so,
he's on tour.
Yeah, so you have to, he's on tour, so you have to pay all the bills. And she's like, what? No, like, he does, like here's a picture of him playing, like, yesterday in Sydney, and it's in front of this
yeah.
big crowd. I'm like, oh, so why do you work here then? Shouldn't you just be,
right.
He's like, no, he's not. Rich either. just
people
like everyone
else. People
cannot
wrap their heads around
yeah.
that. Yeah.
And I understand that because I couldn't do it either. You know, when I was 16, I thought, damn, I wonder what the Get Up Kids mansions are like. Like,
oh,
that
yeah.
was like,
wow.
I was like, I wonder how many water slides they have.
That's funny, yeah. No, well, it is funny though, sometimes how you don't understand the differences between bands. Like, when I would go to shows, I remember going to see, like, Blink-182 at this venue in Toronto called the Cool House, it was called. Now it's torn down. Maybe you guys played there. I don't know.
I don't think so.
And then
so.
I would go, like, the week later, and I'd see, like, Lagwagon. So I didn't understand that, like, Blink-182 literally had mansions, and Lagwagon literally, like, I mean, I probably did okay. But, you know,
yeah.
I just kind of put everyone on the same level, and I never, like, really
no, of
thought
course.
About it.
If you were a national touring band, you were famous. That was the beginning, middle, end of it. If you opened the bill...
Oh, yeah. The opening the bill is the best
yeah.
example of that. Of,
yeah.
Of the opening
oh,
bands.
Absolutely.
Oh, they must do as well as the headliners.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's it's always what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess a couple things I want to talk about. I mean, right now, your voice... you've told me is hurting a little bit.
It's a little fried.
So we're going to cut this off a little short. But did you have any problems on Warped Tour? Because you were doing two sets. You were doing the Aaron West and Wonder Years every single day.
I did have a little bit of a problem, but not until I got sick. So you and I talked
yeah.
about this a little bit. Well, one, Warped Tour is a little easier because the sets are shorter.
except you never know what fucking time you're going to play.
That's the truth.
So that can really throw off your pattern. Rhythm.
But as far as doing two sets, it did start to bother me a little bit. And so I went to the pharmacy and they prescribed me a steroid pack because my throat was so swollen.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost my goddamn mind. I had never really taken steroids for anything before. And they were like Min, who works on Warped Tour, is like the tour, yeah, like nurse practitioner, or I don't actually know her title, but she yeah, takes care of you, right? She was like, oh, they prescribed you this steroid. If you get real sad or angry, know that that's why.
Holy shit.
And I was like freaking out, like getting in arguments with people, like in our band and other bands, like punching things, slamming things.
That's weird for you too, because you're a fairly even-keeled dude, and you don't drink or anything.
No.
You're a straight-edge dude. So,
and I couldn't figure out why I was so upset, but I was so upset, like deeply, deeply sad and angry and like acting erratically on stage. In Baltimore, I climbed a tree and jumped out of it at the end of the night and just I just didn't know what to do with all of the – and then I was like, oh, it's the steroids.
Man, I can't believe that would have that effect. Like,
you know, and Kennedy hurt his wrist right before this tour, and they gave him a steroid pack, and he said he's feeling the exact same way. He's snapping at people.
Yeah, he tried to fight me in the venue earlier.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. Kennedy's even more of like a peaceful dude than I am.
He is, yeah. I think he told me after Warped Tour ended he was going to go on some like retreat in like, yeah, you know, the Pacific Northwest,
yeah,
or
he
something.
Just goes like, he's going to go hiking camp, yeah, with my dog and my fiance, yeah, for whatever, how long, like, man. Oh, I'm going to go hike Machu Picchu, like.
Okay, but you're going to be okay. Your voice is okay tonight.
Yeah,
you're going to get through the show.
It should be fine.
What I want to bring up, which is interesting, again, the lead singer syndrome thing, is the reason I'm playing tonight is I'm filling in, taking some time away from Motion City Soundtrack, who would be there, except their singer won't do 5 shows in a row.
I think it's 6 shows in a row. You can't
six
do
in
six.
A row. Can't do 6 in a row. So they bailed off the show tonight in Toronto.
Well, they didn't bail. They were never on it.
They were never. Yeah, that's what I mean. But
yeah,
they
couldn't do it.
Right.
So every singer, and you and I both know this, everyone knows their own body, right?
Sure.
And everyone knows what they can and can't do and their limitations, and everyone is different. So for me, we booked the tour with this specific plan in mind. It was 2 shows. And then I need a day off. At the beginning of a tour, I can do 2, maybe 3 if I'm lucky.
Yep.
And then I need a day off. And then after that day off, if nothing goes wrong, I'm good for up to 6 shows, sometimes 7 in a row.
That's pretty much the schedule I'm on. I like only a few at the beginning because a lot of people think when you're a singer, as the tour goes on, it's harder. Like, it makes sense you'd be more tired. It's actually, for me, it's the opposite.
Easier.
I get stronger as,
yeah,
I go.
Easier. The only 2 things that can throw a wrench in that, like I said, Warped Tour, one of the things that happened was I got sick.
Yeah.
And if I get sick, that's that.
Yeah.
The other thing is the manufactured fog that they sometimes pump into venues. There's, yeah, a bunch of different kinds of that. And, like, we have one for this tour that shoots up, and it's, like, it's literally gone the second you stop pressing the button. I don't know what it's made of. It kind of smells a little nice, but it doesn't hang in the air. Then there's the other kind where they fill the venue with it that hangs heavy in the air. And I don't – everyone always – all the every light guy in the world would be like, no, dude, it's water-based. It's not hurting your throat. It hurts my throat. It really does.
Yeah.
And it was in the venue last night, and it always gives me a sinus headache above my right eye.
You have a specific spot.
It's right here.
Okay.
And it kind of goes back over my temple. I'll always get that when there's too much fog in the room, and it dries my throat out. And throughout the night, I'll notice I'm having trouble singing. And then the next day, I'll really struggle. And so last night, the venue was pumped full of it. And it can be water-based. I don't know what it
is.
I don't know what the base of it is.
I'll agree with you. I don't like the smoke.
I don't like it, and I don't care about looking cool. Like, people were like, but it looks – the lights are going to look so much cooler. And I'm like – we're not Def Leppard.
No, you're
not. I
don't
really care.
Well, that's another thing. I always wonder because, yeah, like sometimes we'll pay like all this fucking money to bring out lights, light package, a lighting guy, and some people don't understand how much space lights take up.
Oh yeah, it's like our whole trailer.
Yeah,
this is the first trailer we've ever brought them out.
Sometimes we have to rent trailer space from another band. One time we almost rented a truck, but that would have just been suicide on the financial side.
Yeah.
People understand like what goes into putting on a show.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, I didn't give a fuck about what if there were lights or whatever. I never cared about that.
We brought
them
out.
To hear the
this
song.
Is the first time we've ever brought out a lighting package, and we've actually gotten a lot of compliments on it.
Yeah.
Summers is actually running it, and it's his first time ever. The show in New York that opened the tour was his first show ever running lights. He's doing an awesome job with it, and it does look cool. It does.
Yep.
But it is secondary to me to what songs we play and how we play them. we thought we should try and add something new, and we're excited about how it looks. But again, I don't think it's a necessity, and I think that a lot of people kind of get in their own head about, okay, we need a click track, we need backing tracks, we need in-ear rigs, we need lights, we need amp modeling things, mm-hmm. we need this whole thing, with dummy cabs, this whole production. I mean, the thing about the Wonder Years is that because we started by playing VFWs and basement shows and YMCAs.
So did Silverstein.
That you could roll us into somebody's floor and there could be no monitor and the worst PA system in the world and we can still play our set.
Yeah.
We don't need any of that shit.
Well, that's, I mean, in Silverstein,
it's nice
too,
to have some of it, but we don't need it.
Yeah. I mean, I think as funny as this is to some people, and I mean, I think, you know, Silverstein and Wonder Years, we're more on the same level in terms of like a punk rock band and where we come from yeah. and what we believe than maybe people would say, because our music is different, you know, and
sure, and
but it's the same
and
thing.
And different
with us.
People will tell us both how not punk we are.
The only thing we,
which
well,
is fine.
The only thing we do play to a click track.
Yeah,
we would never. Silverstein will never use backing tracks. I think that stuff's fucking disgusting.
Well, and I don't mind if it adds something to your show and it sounds cooler, it sounds better. I don't have any problem with anybody doing anything. They do them. It's kind of an isolationist thing for me. We do us. Everybody else can do whatever they want, and I'm never going to complain about it or anything. The point I'm making isn't that it's wrong or bad or whatever. It's just that we never needed it. Like,
mm-hmm.
I remember a show, we played the Glamour Kills Holiday Fest, and it was funny because we were, like, headlining it. And we rolled up, and all these bands were loading out their in-ear rig, their tracks, these, like, laptops, all these matching things. And at the time, we didn't have, like, matching cabs. We had, like, these old beat-up cabs. We rolled up in our van and trailer. The trailer is literally held together by ratchet straps because our driver on Warped Tour had jackknifed it and broke it, and we couldn't afford a new trailer. So around the outside of the whole thing was one long ratchet strap. And when we undid it, all the panels flip up in the air. We drop our trailer door, and we're, like, loading in all these beat-up amps and all this shit. And, the one band was like, oh, you guys, the locals? And we're like, oh, we're actually headlining. It's just like,
it's a nice little fuck you, though, you know?
It's just like, what we know is shitty. Like, we're shitty. Like, we just don't care. We don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I mean, we not in like a bad way, not in like a we don't want to sound good way, but in like a none of the status things matter to us.
No, but I think your band, almost the anti-status, is almost important for what you do, because you're up there, like, you're like a real dude, you know? You're not putting on a fucking wardrobe when you go on stage. You just said, I don't give a fuck. Like, yeah. I want to sound better, and I want to play the songs I want to play. I don't really care how I look.
I wear the same shirt on stage every day, because why fuck up two shirts?
Yeah.
You know, or three shirts, or four shirts. Like,
and you know, you are, like, very much on that side. There's people, like, you know, some people I'm going to interview that are going to be very much on the other side, and I'm, like, somewhere in the middle, and that's fine. But this podcast is about how we all, so many people can do the same thing, the same job, essentially, but people can do it in so many different ways.
Yeah, I kind of feel what you're saying, and the thing is, I actually think that sometimes that shit can be dope. Like the huge show, we watched Paramore, we played a show at Paramore at TCNJ, and it was one of the coolest shows I've ever seen. Like, it's just kind of about what's right for your band. And I think we know it's right for us, and we try new things, and we add little bits and pieces. And we know what wouldn't work for us, and so we stay away from it, and some of it we just don't give a shit about. But yeah, I think you're right. At the end of the day, we're here to play songs, and we're here to play them fast and loud and mm-hmm. have a good time while we do it. And
absolutely, man. You guys did this split 7-inch with Motion City Soundtrack.
Sure,
I guess
yeah.
It was like kind of a promo thing for this tour.
Yeah, it was supposed to be.
And
it actually ended up.
It is so cool. Tell the people what you guys did, because I love the idea so much.
Yeah, there was a delay in the pressing, which is why we don't actually have it on tour. We had to sell it online.
Oh, okay.
And it's all sold out now. But I've had this idea forever. And it came to me with the thought that, like, oftentimes rappers will rap on each other's beats. And I always thought that was sick, but there's really no equivalent to that in our world.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do, because once you hear a song, the
it's
melody
in your head
and the
forever,
lyrics are,
yeah.
are forever there. So we had this kind of golden opportunity with Motion City. They said we want to do a split for the tour. Let's think of something cool. And I was like, I already know. you guys have a record coming out. We have a record coming out. You've never heard ours. We've never heard yours. So I want you to take a song.
Instrumental.
And strip the vocals off. Yeah. Yep. Give me just the instrumental. And we're going to give you a song the same way. Having never heard our song and having us never heard your song, Justin and I were set with the task of we're going to write our own lyrics and our own melodies. I'm going to tell you the song title.
Oh, lyrics too?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you the song title.
Only the song title. Okay.
That's all you get. And from just that song title, create your own lyrics, write your own melodies, record it. And then we'll be able to hear each other's songs. So it was cool for me. And what I wanted to do for it was take scrapped lyrics from the record and put together a song from those. So there are a ton of lyrics, and I'm sure you have this too. You have a lot of lyrics and a lot of lines that don't end up getting used from the record, and they kind of go into a scrap pile.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to pull from them and work out a song out of those lyrics that didn't get used, so that in a way, it felt lyrically like an extension of our record. And then specifically, I ended up writing something that answered Cardinals from the other perspective. So in Cardinals, I'm saying, if you call me back or let me in, I swear I'll never let you down again. And then this song is the character, the subject of Cardinals answering back, well, where were you when I needed you? And so I think that's kind of a cool way, you know, to work that out. And so it ended up being lines that went unused on the record, a lot from the original draft of Cardinals that then got flipped into a song answering that song.
That's a cool way to do it.
Yeah.
So you've heard, so this is all done. So you've heard his version.
Yeah.
And what was your take on it? Like, was it anywhere near the same as, because I haven't heard the songs, were they anywhere near the same as your vision, or was his so off the wall for you?
Certain things were really off the wall. So what kind of, one of the things that'll happen though is that, so you're already, there's a song that exists there. So you're locked into a tempo, you're locked into a key signature, you're locked into a chord progression. So what you're able to do is no longer infinite, right? So he has to do something, and there are cues we get as songwriters. It's like, okay, the hi-hat's close and the guitars are clean and the bass is low. I should probably sing down the octave. Okay, we're on the crash cymbal, we're on the ride cymbal, and the guitars are distorted and everything's loud. Right. I should probably sing up the octave. Those kinds of cues.
Or things like, and this is good for people that are trying to write vocal melodies and shit. It's like, you got to decide too, like, am I going to come on the downbeat? Or am I going to come in on the vocal on the offbeat?
Yeah, and, like, or is there...
Where structuring the phrases, was his and yours similar to each other that way?
So the phrasing in the verses was similar. But what's interesting is there's an instrumental break in the song that we had as just an instrumental break that he, hearing the song, read as, this is probably the chorus. And so he wrote a part over that we didn't sing over. And then over a part that we had as the chorus, he has this like kind of an out chorus-y part. And then during the bridge where I'm singing, he decided to do a spoken word part where I told him the song was called A Song for Patsy Cline. And he found the news article that announced her death and reads it.
So cool.
And it's this cool spoken word part over the bridge. So he did some really creative things with it, but it's interesting just to hear and I did kind of the same thing with their song. It was like, oh, I didn't realize this was the chorus. I just started singing here. Like, oh, you did a pickup here. I didn't even think to do that.
I would love to be a part of some kind of project like
it's
that.
It's really
like
cool.
If somebody had an instrumental track and gave it to, I'd love to hear, like, give it to 10 singers. I want to hear what 10 different guys would do, or girls would do. You know,
Chris Farron did a cool thing similarly, and I think it was with Tim from Cursive, but I might be getting that wrong, where they each wrote a song, and then they sent each other the chords and the lyrics, but nothing else. Not the time signature, not the tempo, not the feel, not the melody. Just here are the lyrics, and here are the chords, and record a version of it. And I thought that was really neat.
Yeah, because those songs would be very similar, I think.
Yeah, right? I think...
Because the chords and the lyrics, I mean, the melody will change, but the songs...
It can't get too far away, but it's going to be a rendition of it, which is neat.
Yeah,
I remember when I really was younger, like Oasis did something where they took the sheet music from their new record and just gave the sheet music to a bunch of New York City subway musicians. I just said, just play this song. And they got a bunch of different versions of it that way.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. You had a great fucking debut on that record. That new record was top 10.
Super proud of that. Yeah. We worked very hard for that.
Are you guys sticking around on Hopeless?
I don't know.
Did you finish your
contract
now?
That is the last record for Hopeless. Okay. And, you know, we have a great relationship with them. So that is definitely a possibility.
They're terrific. We did Silverstein. We did two records, signed two records with them, and then we actually ended up doing an extra one with them, and they're terrific to work
with.
Yeah,
they're really great to work with. And so it's just going to be about, we don't, you know, it's at a point right now where for the first time ever, we are no longer in it. We've never been free agents, really.
Yeah.
You know? And so we're just in the position to just kind of be like, okay, we love what we have at Hopeless. Is there something that fits what we're looking for more or less? Or, you know, like, are there other ideas out there? It's
sure,
the kind
I
of
mean,
thing where,
I mean,
like, it's almost like I bring everything back to football, but it's almost like, okay, you love the team you're playing for, you love the system you're playing in, you love the coach. There's a really good chance you're going to re-sign with that team. But you should at least hear what other people have to say about it, right?
Yeah.
So we'll
take
listen
some
to some
dinners. Get them
we'll wine and dine you. There's no question that we'll listen to some conversations.
Yeah, I think it's good too, and I think it's good to always be thinking what is coming next, because this fucking industry is changing so rapidly all the time.
That's for sure.
And especially
yeah.
with how you know, there's the streaming stuff and all that. Like, it's making things really like changing everything up so much. Not to mention there's so many of the like global markets that you got to think about, like what labels have the best international stuff.
Yeah, and Hopeless has a wonderful international team, which is great.
They do. Like, yeah, we you know, I know all those guys.
Yeah, we have a ton of great stuff to say about Hopeless. I think that a lot of times, like, you know, you would hear about like Bayside or whatever at the end of their deal with like Victory, and they were like, oh, thank fucking God we're out.
Well, hey,
you know,
we were there too.
Exactly. I've heard things from you too about it, and you know, and other labels like that that have just been like, you know, and I'm sure not every band on those labels had those same experiences, but there are times where labels and bands have a really seriously like aggressive relationship with each other.
Yeah.
Vehemently don't like each other.
Yeah.
Well, like Hopeless.
We liked Hopeless too. We're on Rise Records now. We moved on, and it was nothing to do with Hopeless and how they treated us. Definitely they were terrific, you know, or how they knew how to sell records and they were great to work with. It was just for our band. We felt like we need to keep moving. We need to keep progressing all the time, and that's why we ended up. So
yeah, like I said, we really like Hopeless. There's no like animosity there at all. The relationship is really great. So there's a really good chance that we'll just stay on Hopeless. But there's also, you know, that doesn't mean for
anything
sure.
can happen.
Anything could happen. You know, we were thinking about maybe signing a Bad Boy.
Bad Boy, yeah.
Yeah, I think that Diddy's got a lot of really good ideas, and you know, just interested to see what he's got to say.
I'll tell you, man, a Diddy verse on the next Wonder Years record would be
Diddy, if
sick.
You're listening to this, you can email me anytime.
Okay.
I've been expecting it.
We'll make sure. We'll get some, as long as he sends me a couple cases of that vodka, I'm good.
Does Diddy make a vodka?
Yeah.
Is he still Diddy?
I don't know what that
He might not
no
even
idea
be Diddy
what
anymore.
The funniest story I ever heard about Diddy, well, it's not the funniest, but it's a story that's related to me personally. My brother-in-law works in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I guess he does like some special event coordination, and I guess it was some Chinese billionaire's birthday, so they had all these celebrities come, and it was like the most lavish like party ever, and Diddy was there, and Diddy like went up to make like a speech for the guy's birthday. It was like, yeah, and my vodka, I can't remember what the vodka's called, but he's like, and everybody here gets a shot of my vodka, everybody, you know. And then my brother-in-law's like, fuck, how many cases do we have? We have 3 bottles. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
So he spent the whole night like calling around every favor in Las Vegas to try to get this fucking shitty vodka, because all of a sudden he's like, could you just give us a heads up?
Yeah, maybe just tell me when you're going to give away cases of vodka.
Yeah, right. So I don't know, man, but it's been nice talking to you. I know your voice is hurting, so we'll cut this short, but hopefully the fantasy football continues to be great for you, and the voice comes back, and the tour's awesome. And
thank you, man. I'm excited to hear you play tonight.
Yeah, I'm pretty nervous, dude. Like, I did some shows on Warped Tour, you know, the Acoustic Basement, where you get like a few hundred in there, maybe max, couple hundred.
Yeah,
this is gonna be a big show in my own hometown, and my friends are all huge Wonder Years fans.
Oh, that's very nice.
So I was like, yeah, I got like 10 guest list spots. My friends were like, we already have tickets.
Perfect.
So so they're all gonna be here. So it's gonna be I'm a little nervous about it, but
I'm sure you'll kill it. You're a consummate professional.
Well, thank you, man, and I appreciate you you asking me and inviting me to do the show. It's
we're excited to have you.
It's gonna be special.
Cool, man. Well, thank you for doing this with me.
All right, it's Lead Singer Syndrome.
That's what it is.
With Dan Soupy Campbell.
That's who I am.
Peace out.
Later.
So there it was, my conversation with Dan Soupy Campbell of the Wonder Years. I guess I should maybe talk a little bit about the solo stuff. I haven't made any official announcements, but people keep asking me, and I'm sure they'll ask me even more. So yes, something is coming. Yes, it will be fairly soon. And yes, it's awesome. So keep your ear to the ground about that. And next week, we have another amazing podcast. So please subscribe, and we'll see you next Monday. That's when the next episode will be up. I'll leave you with one of my favorite Wonder Years songs. This is Lead Singer Syndrome. Thanks a lot. Peace and love.